Okay. So just one note before we start, you know, our Kollel is affiliated with YU and with Torah Mitzion, and Torah Mitzion contacted us and told us that Torah Mitzion International is focusing this month on Arvut Hadadit, responsibility for the other, and asked that if we were giving a shiur on the topic, or to give shiur on the topic, just to mention that this is a worldwide thing, which was easy considering we were already talking about Yosef and his brothers, which is one of the themes of the stories. So I just, as long as we're giving something that's in the topic, we might as well note that this is the focus of Torah Mitzion International. Okay, so continuing in the Yosef stories, we noted a few weeks ago two, you know, radically different approaches to the Yosef story, understanding Yosef's experience during this story. We'd noted on the one hand, I just put here a summary of it, Rav Yoel ben Nun's claim that Yosef, until the last minute, didn't realize that Yaakov hadn't been in on the plan, didn't know about the sale. He wondered, why was it that Yaakov hadn't sent for him? He's only a few days away. Why didn't he look? He didn't realize that Yaakov thought he was dead. And he felt like he'd been shunted out of the family. And what drives him throughout the story is this feeling of being rejected, of anger, both of having been rejected by his brothers, by his father, maybe by God. At the last moment, when he hears that it all been a mistake, that Yaakov didn't know, so that's when he breaks down and begins the process of rehabilitating his relationship with his family. Rav Meidan, on the other hand, says no, that the entire time Yosef realized that his father hadn't been in on it, it was his brothers. And instead, the reason that he's going through all of these motions of you know, testing his brothers, of tormenting his brothers, is because he has this nevuah, right? He has these dreams that he has to bring his brothers back to a point where they will bow to him, but they themselves will also be the stars, right? That they will have done tshuva. So he's trying to orchestrate a situation in which they do tshuva so that his dreams will be fulfilled, but they will no longer be those brothers who sold him into slavery, but they will have transformed. And that's what we mentioned a few weeks ago. But this week I saw an article by Dr. Brachi Elitzur. She's the head of the Michalet Herzog. We've mentioned her before, but she's the head of the Michalet Herzog Women's Division, so at Migdal Oz. And her analysis of the story, I think, is actually very compelling. And she argues that basically everybody who reads the story argues that Yosef, they have their own version of the story, but they all are trying to fit Yosef into a box and saying Yosef either knows that his father wasn't in on it, but he's taking revenge on his brothers, or he's testing his brothers, and he has no element of revenge whatsoever. But she said that it's very hard to look at this story and think and fit all the evidence in with any position and say that Yosef is completely acting based on a sense of mission, understanding that God sent him with no anger towards brothers. Also, it's hard to say that he's only working out of anger with no sense of mission, with no sense of fulfilling the destiny that he learned from his dreams. And she suggests what maybe is intuitive, but we tend not to think of the story this way just because we get caught up in one shot or the other and forget, you know, the nuances of the story, that Yosef is a complicated figure who's had 17 years, where he's 22 years really, where he has been away from his family, sold into slavery, right? A very hard life, but he's also a very righteous person who believes in God and believes that God has a plan for him. And she argues that to fully understand the story, you have to realize that different parts of Yosef are competing within him, right? It's not that he's totally, you know, driven by his mission of God, or that he's totally driven by revenge, or that he's driven by whatever he might be driven, right? He's driven by a lot of things all at once. And the reason that the story is so complex is because it's a complex story. That's how it is. So she identifies three different things that drive Yosef and goes through the story pointing out how at different points Yosef seems to be struggling with which of these three elements is going in the end to direct his path. And she highlights three, and I summarize it here in two. So the first thing she notes is that there are definitely parts of the story where Yosef appears as the extremely righteous, you know, believer in God, who despite all that's happened to him, is convinced that God is there with him and that he's here for a reason. He has a mission. And he's not going to take revenge, right? There are times where Yosef appears like that in the story. He's driven by a mission. He knows that God has put him here for a reason, to support his family. And that's what drives him. And he really does seem, despite all the hardship, despite all the torment he's been through, to be able to rise above it all and say, God sent me here and I'm going to do what God said, regardless of the fact that this is a really hard situation on a personal level. Right? We can't deny that there are moments where Yosef seems to be acting that way. The second thing she said is that there are other times where it seems like Yosef is acting out of revenge or anger, right? Maybe not full-fledged revenge, but he's angry, right? He may be a tzaddik, but that doesn't mitigate the fact that he is angry, right? His brothers sold him into slavery, and that was not right. And all the faith in God, all the trust in God is not going to change the fact that his brothers should not have done what they did, and he's either angry at them or even taking revenge at different points or struggling against his desire to take revenge. And there are clearly moments in the story where that's happening. And the third thing she notes is that there are also moments where Yosef seems to be driven by the very basic love of family and longing to have his family back. Right, specifically Yaakov and Binyamin, but in general, right, he, with all the anger and all the pain, right, he does very much desire to be part of his family again. And she argues that if we want to understand fully, we have to realize that Yosef is driven by all three of these and is often struggling with which of these in the end is going to dictate his behavior. So, just to run through different elements in the story to sort of flesh out her point, I put a list of just a few examples here that she put. So to take an early example, right? Let's take an example from before the brothers come down, right? The brothers aren't in the story, but Yosef is in Mitzrayim. So one of the first things that happens to Yosef in Mitzrayim, the first challenges he faces after he's bought by Potiphar, is the challenge with Eshes Potiphar, with Potiphar's wife. And she notes, if you look into that story, right, the brothers aren't here. So he may be angry at his brothers, but they're not in the picture yet. So the question is just, does he, despite all that's happened to him, has he maintained his faith? Is he still driven by his mission, by his role as a member of the family of Yaakov, who has a God-sent mission? She said, at this point in the story, when we can isolate the other elements, right? There is no, right? His family is in the picture, so he's not expressing his longing or his anger towards his family. The only question is, will his pain lead him to forget his role as an Oved Hashem? The answer is no, right? At that point, he's clearly driven by his mission. And if you look at his description in Perek Lamed Tet, Pasuk Tet, when after all the times that Eshes Potiphar tries to get him to be with her, he says, "Einenu gadol b'bayit hazeh mimeni." There's no one greater in this house than me. V'lo chasach menu muma. My master didn't hold anything back from me. King im osach basher adishto, except for you, because you are his wife. Ve'eich eseh haragdala hazos v'chatasi lelokim. And how could I do this great, this great sin, and I will have sinned to God? And here at this moment of temptation, despite all the pain and all the difficulty, here the wealthy woman of the house, his master's wife, is trying to get him to be with her, right? And presumably this, is a way for him to be, greater in the house, right? If he's going to be the lover of the woman of the house, right, that's going to help him in terms of his role as a slave, right? She will, make things easier. But despite that, he clearly, at some level, is always driven by his conviction that he believes in God and that demands certain things from him. Similarly, when he has his discussions with Paro, he has the chance of getting out of this slavery, right? Paro now needs him. The king, the pharaoh of Egypt, needs him and took him out of his slavery, out of jail. And he said, "I've heard that you are a interpreter of dreams," and he must know that if he succeeds here, he's going to be out of jail. He may not know he's going to be viceroy, but he knows that if he succeeds, Paro is going to, right, free him from jail, right? And he has it in his best interest to make it out that he is, right, personally brilliant. That he is just an interpreter of dreams. There's no god in the picture. He's just a really smart person who helped the king, and now the king owes him something. And yet, at that moment, when he has, you know, Paro in his hands, right, Paro calls him. And if we skip forward to, this is Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Tezayin. So Yosef says, Vayan Yosef es Paro lemor, Biladai, it's not me. Elokim Yanesh Lom Paro, God will interpret the dream of Paro. Right, so she says, in these stories where the brothers are out of the picture, and the only question is, has Yosef maintained his identity? Is he continuing to be driven simply by his convictions and his commitment to God? The answer is yes. Right, that's clearly part of Yosef's personality. Now, what about once the brothers come? Right, does this side of Yosef continue to animate him once the brothers are in the picture? So here she argues something very interesting. So she goes to the first time that Yosef meets his brothers. So Yosef meets his brothers. Let's come to it. We're going to have to do a lot of turning here in the Chumash. In Perek Membet, so the brothers come down. Right, Pasuk Gimel. Vayardu Achi Yosef Asar Alish Barbar Mimitzrayim. Ves Binyamin Achi Yosef Elo Shalach Yaakov Esachav Ki Amar Peni Ekrenu Ason. Right, Binyamin doesn't go down. Vayavo Bnei Yisrael Ishbor B'toch Habayim Ki Ayar Av Beretz Kanan. And they come down to get food because there was a famine. V'Yosef Hu Ashalid Al Haaretz Hu Amashbir L'Chol Am Haaretz. And the brothers come to him and they bow down to him. Right, they bow down to the ground. So, at this moment, just looking in the psukim, do you think that Yosef knew that his brothers were going to come? Was he prepared for this moment? So, simple read of the psukim, I would say no. Right, it doesn't sound like that. Now, if you look in 3, right, I put the Radak. The Radak thinks he was. But the Radak says, Yosef hu ha-shalit. Yosef was the leader, was the viceroy. V'utzrechu echav lavo lefanav ki umashbir. So his brothers had to come before him because he was in charge of giving out the food. Umashbir poel yotze l'shlishi mitzavel anashav sheyishbiru. Right, he was in charge. Right, grammatically means mashbir, he sustained others, he commanded others to sustain. But he had set it up that the buyers would come to him. That's what he commanded, that no one should get food until they came to him. Why did he do this? Because he knew his brothers were going to come. Kira'av haya beretz Kanaan, because there was a famine in Kanaan. Vim yavo al kol panim yitra'u elav v'chein asu. And he planned it. He knew they would have to come down, so he set up a situation where they would come before him. And the Radak opens the possibility that what's driving him the whole time is a plan. Now, what that plan is, the Radak doesn't say yet, right? We can still say it's a plan of taking revenge, or it's a plan of supporting his family and having the dreams come true. But the Radak at least thinks this is part of a plan. But Brachi Elitzur notes that the simple pshat of the pasuk, that's not the case. Right? Yosef was totally unprepared for this meeting, right? For whatever reason, he is the manager of this huge food distribution service in Mitzrayim, and people come before him, and then suddenly he looks up, and who is it? It's his brothers, and she said, look at the psukim, the next pasuk. Vayar Yosef et Achav. Yosef sees his brothers v'yakirem, and he recognized them. Right? So she said, what does it sound like? It sounds like she wasn't expecting it. So she said, well, wait a second. If we want to figure out, is Yosef being driven by anger at all, or desire for revenge, right? So when are we going to see that reaction by Yosef, if he's caught off guard. Because Yosef may be a big tzaddik and be committed to doing what God said. That's very easy when you can plan, right? You can think and say calmly to yourself, okay, I know my brother's going to come, I'm angry, but I'm going to be in control. But if you're surprised, then that's not what's going to happen, right? Because if you have that anger deep inside, the biggest tzaddik in the world, if he's not prepared to meet, you know, all his enemies all at once, he's going to snap. And what happens? Right, the next words, Vayit Naker Alehem. He recognizes them. Vayit Naker is he acts as a stranger. Right? Vayidaber Itam Kashot. And he speaks very harshly to them. Vayomer Alehem, my ayin batem, where'd you come from? Vayomer Me'eretz Kanan Lishbar Ochel. And they said, we came to eat food. And then the pasuk repeats it. Vayakir Yosef Achav. He recognized them again. Vehein lo kiru. He sees them. He knows who they are. Vayiskor Yosef Achav. Amod Asher Chalam Lahem. Right? He remembers his dreams. Vayomer Lahem Miraglim Atem. You're spies. Lerod Eder Vat Haaretz Batem. You came to spy out the land. Vayomer Lahem Lo Adoni. Vavadecha Balish Baruch. We didn't come for that. Kulanu Bishan Eish Echad Nachnu. Kenim Anachnu. Yovadecha Miraglim. We're brothers. We just came to get food. Vayomer Lahem Lo. Kervat Haaretz Batem Lerod. You came to see the, right, to see the nakedness of the land. And they say again, "Vayomer Shneim Azar Avadech Achim Anachnu." No, we're 12 brothers. And then again in Pasuk Yudal, "Vayomer Lahem Yosef, Hu Asher Dibarti Lachem." I said, "No, Lemor Meraglim Atem, you are spies." Bizot Bizot Tibachenu, and this is how I'll test you. Chay Pharaoh, I swear by the life of Paro, Tetsumizeh, you won't leave Kim Bavachem Akatonen unless your brothers come. Shilchumi Kem Echad. Send one brother back, but I want 11 of you here in jail, or 10 of you here in jail. There are 11 brothers. Right? Are you telling the truth? If not, I promise, you are spies and you'll be dealt with accordingly. So he throws them in jail for 3 days. So she points to this story and says the simplest understanding, as far as she can tell, is that Yosef is caught off guard. And what's Yosef's reaction? It's a dual reaction. He forgets God, right? Tzidkus out of the question. He's motivated by two things now. Anger and a longing to be part of the family. Not these brothers, but Binyamin. Right? So what does he do? Right? He's caught off guard. So what's his first reaction? Two things. I want Binyamin, who's the one brother I still, right, who didn't sell me. And I want to punish these brothers. So he throws them all in jail and says, one of you will go back and get Binyamin and come back here. And she said, the simplest understanding of these psukim is that when Yosef is caught off guard, his two sort of primal desires come out. The desire for revenge and the desire to see Binyamin. And that's, right, without thinking, that's how he reacts. Right? He's yelling at them and he's accusing them. And he's coming up with a story to throw them in jail to see Binyamin while everybody else is in jail. But what happens immediately after that, right? They're in jail. So he has time to think. Now what happens? I'm building a little bit on what she said. But now, right, we continue. What happens? So Vayomer Aleihem Yosef Vayomer Shlishi. 3 days pass. And he says, you know what? Zodasu vichyu. This is what you should do. Et ha'elokim ani yarei. I fear God. Im keinim atem. If you're telling the truth, achichem echad yaser. One person will stay here, beveit mishmarchem, in jail. Vatem luchu aviyu shever ravon batachem. And you take food back home. Vatachichem akaton daviyu elai. Bring the youngest brother here. Viamnu divrechem. And then I'll believe you. Velo tamutu vayasuchein. And then you won't die. And that's what they did. And she argues that, you know, we tend to look at this story as Yosef, you know, lying to the brothers, as playing a part. Saying, oh, I fear God, don't worry. She says, no. The simplest understanding of the story is that he's telling the truth. They don't know he's Yosef, but he's telling the truth here. That 3 days ago, he wanted all 11 of them in jail, and he was willing to let one go to bring Binyamin down. 3 days' time, he doesn't have to see the brothers. They're in jail, he thinks. And, right, the other Yosef comes out, and he says, no, wait a second. Ed ha'elokim ani yarei, I fear God. I can't do this, right? I want to see my brother, right? I want him to come down. And, you know, there are other things we have to do. We have to bring everybody down. I have to make sure you come back. But I don't need to punish all of you. I fear God. And she argues that that was the transformation, right? That you see the different parts of Yosef sort of warring with each other, right? When he's caught off guard, his two primal desires come out. His desire for revenge and his desire to see Binyamin. Give him a few days, right? He still wants to see Binyamin, right? But now he's willing to say, you know what? I don't need to keep everybody in jail. I don't need to take revenge, right? I need to make sure they come back. I'll keep one here, but I'm going to do minimal damage. I'm not going to just express my anger and throw everybody in jail, even though I can. Right? So that's how she understands the story, which I think when you read the psukim is actually a very powerful one. That it's not that, right, he had the same plan from beginning to end. She argues that no, there are different parts of him that are, you know, fighting within himself, and he's going through a process. He's trying to deal with it. Other example she points to in the story, right? So she says, if you look at, right now, if we jump backwards again, when Yosef has children, when he names his children, Menashe, right? He calls Menashe Kinashani. We've talked about this pasuk before. Kinashani Elokim et kol amaliv et kol beit avi. God has made me forget the pain of my family. So she points to Menashe and said, "Well, you see a few things from the naming of Menashe. Is that Yosef is one still committed to God, right? He's naming his children Menashe, but also he's responding to a tremendous amount of pain, right? He names his child Kinashani." Hashem Ed Beit Avi, that he's made me forget my father's house, because, right, there's anger, there's pain, right? Thank God I've forgotten that. But he hasn't lost his commitment to God. So you see both of these elements manifesting themselves in Menashe's name, and also in Ephraim, Vet Shem Hasheni Kara Ephraim, Ki Ephrani Elokim Beretz Ani, because God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Again, he's expressing pain. Right, but he's also saying, "But God has been with me through the pain." Other indications in the story, other expressions in the story. So, I think the biggest one that we have to figure out, right? The biggest question we really have to figure out is, right, all the way at the end of the story. Right, Yosef says to his brothers, after he reveals himself, "Don't worry, I'm not going to take revenge." Right? Why? Right? And we've talked about this moment of breakdown, but he says, "We're in the beginning of Perek Mem Hey." V'lo yachol Yosef lehit apek. Yosef couldn't hold back. V'chol nitzavim elav. A crowd, see what kol Yishmael eyes. We said, "Everybody go, right, leave." V'lo amad ishi tov yitzvada Yosef alachav. And no one's there when Yosef reveals himself. V'yitein et kolo b'vchi. And he breaks down crying. V'yishmu Mitzrayim. V'yishma beit paro. V'yomer et Yosef alachav. So Yosef says to his brothers, "Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Ha'od avicha, is my father still alive?" Right, so, first of all, first thing, right? What's the first thing that drove him? Right? The longing for family. First thing. Now, whether you think that's like Rav Yoel, right? That this is what broke him when he realized his father wanted him. Or like Rav Meidan, right? That this was his plan. Still, you can't deny the fact his first words are, Ha'od avichai, v'lo yachlu achlav, la'alnot oto ki nevalu mipanav. V'yomer Yosef alachav, and now he says to his brothers, Gushunai lai, come here. Vayigash, when they come, Vayomer, Ani Yosef Achichem, I'm Yosef, your brother. Right? Asher Mechartem Osim Mitzrayim, you sold me. Vata, but now Al Teatzvu. Right? Don't be upset. Vayichar Beinichem, Ki Mechartem Osim. Don't be upset that you sold me. Rehena. Kil Mechia Shalachan Yelokim Lefnechem, because God has sent me to sustain you. Kizeshna Taimarav Bekerav Aretz, Vaot Chameshanim, Asherin Charish Vekatsir, because it's been two and there's another five coming. Vaishlacheni Elokim Lefnechem, and God sent me before you, Lasum Lachem Sheirit Baaretz, to ensure that you would continue to live. Lachyot Lachem Lefleta Gdola. Vata. A third time, lo atem shlachtem oti, you didn't send me, right, Haina. Ki Elokim, God sent me. Vayisimeni lav lefaro, and he's made me a master even over Faro. Don lechol beito, Moshel, b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Maharu, valu alavi, go back to my father, v'amartem elav, and tell him, ko amar bincha Yosef, this is what your son Yosef said, samani Elokim, ladon lechol Mitzrayim. God has made me a leader of Egypt. Redai la'al tamot. And then he continues his description, come and I'll support you and I'll give you Goshen and you'll be fine. I mean, he said, the speech where he breaks down, right, we only see two things, right? The anger is gone, right? We see two things, longing, right? And you listen to the words, it's Ha'od Avichai, I'm your brother, yes, you sold me, but don't feel bad about it, right? I'm going to support you, right? And you see a very clear sense of mission. Three times in those psukim, God has sent me, God has sent me, God has sent me. And then again, a fourth time, when he tells them what to tell Yaakov, tell them that God has made me master of Egypt. Right? So you see that at that last moment, right, the two things that come out, the anger, revenge is gone. What comes forth is his sense of mission and conviction and commitment to God and his longing for his family. The question that we have to ask is, that's for sure what he says here. But when did he come to this realization, right? And this is part of the dispute we already talked about with Rav Migdan and Rav Yoel. According to Rav Yoel, right, this revelation came now, right? The ability to put aside anger and to only focus on his desire to be part of the family and his commitment to God only actually happened during this speech when he realized that Yaakov hadn't rejected him, right? And he was able to let go of that pain that he'd held with him for all that time that he thought that his father had rejected him and not just his brothers. Once he was able to let go of that pain, so then the other two elements of his personality, his longing for his family and his commitment to God, were overpowered the anger and revenge that he'd been going through until, right, the anger and revenge he'd been expressing until this point in the story. According to Rav Migdan, no. From this speech, you see that this is what drove him the whole time, right? If you think that, no, he never thought that he'd been rejected, and the entire time he was trying to bring his brothers to tshuva, right? The anger all the way through the story is really, it maybe at that first moment when he, right, doesn't have time to think, it expresses itself, but it wasn't what drove him through the whole story. So at the close of this story, it's clear that once Yosef is in control, he manages to suppress that anger and that revenge, and really is, right, what comes out is the true Yosef, is the Yosef who wants to be part of his family and wants to be committed to God. But a central question in the story is, when did that happen? Right? According to Rav Yoel, this is the moment when that happens, right? But Yosef wasn't able, until he realized Yaakov didn't reject him, to see that. Right? He needed to know that he hadn't been rejected by his father to be able to, right, not express the anger towards brothers. According to Rav Meidan, no, right? That is the point. Is this is who Yosef was, and the anger is really sublimated. But again, whether you think like Rav Yoel or Rav Meidan, I think Brachi Elitzur's analysis is correct, that the way to understand the story is to not try to come up with one answer and say he's only expressing X, Y, or Z. It's a question of degree, right? But these are different parts of his personality that are warring within him because he was in a very hard situation. And again, right, the question of the accusation of spying, right? Which part of his personality is that, right? Is that, according to Rav Meidan, that is his expression of mission, right? This was part of his plan from the beginning, is to make sure they come down and he can support them and they can go through tshuva. But if you think like, right, Brachi Elitzur, at least that accusation of spying and then the lies he has to build on top of that, those are part of the anger side of him, right? Then he learns how to deal with it, right? But, right, that original lie, that original accusation that he's building on was an expression of anger, right? Is that part of his plan or not? Again, here, note in 6, I put the imprisonment of the brothers, which we already spoke about. Another element that she brings up is the question of the giving back the money. Right? One of the things that runs the story multiple times is that Yosef puts the money back in his in his brother's grain sacks. So she says, well, how do you understand that moment, right? Which part of Yosef is expressing himself? And there's two possibilities, right? One is that it's the brotherhood side of him, or the longing for his family, the feeling that, you know, okay, I've gotten over this, I'm sending them home, and I'm going to put their money back in, because these are my brothers, I'm not taking money from them, right? They don't need to know that I did it, but it's a, you know, it's a token gift, right? It's, you know, someone who's, you know, it's when you, you know, someone you love leaves the house and you stuck a candy in their coat pocket that they find later, right? That's what he's doing. They don't know that it's him, but it's, you know, it's, he wants, you know, at some level he wants them to feel that way. Or is this the anger side of him, right? Which is what they think, right? They don't know he's Yosef, but they think this is framing, right? Now, so which is it, right? Well, it depends, right? It could be both. It could be either, right? It depends. There are these warring parts of Yosef. And depending of which part of Yosef you think is winning at that moment will help you understand. Now, by time the brothers come back, right, they're ready for the worst. They thought they were being framed. So they say to the person in charge of Yosef's house, we don't know what happened, but the money was in our bags, right? We brought back double. And what does the person in charge of the house say? Right, if we jump back, right, he says, this is Perek. Perek Mem Gimel. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Says, Vayomer Shalom Lachem Al Tirao. Don't worry about it. Elokechem Velokei Avichem Natan Lachem Matmon Bamtechodechem Kaspechem Ba'ilai Ve'yotzei Aleim Et Shimon. Don't worry. God and the God of your fathers has given you a gift. So, who's talking there? Right? Is that Yosef? Right? I mean, he's not actually speaking, but is that what, right? Is that expressing the sentiment and the convictions of Yosef? Right? That this was a gift that he gave them? Right? Or is it that Yosef has had a chance to calm down now, and now he's saying that, but originally he really was trying to frame them. They were right in their fear, right? Which is it? Is their fear unfounded, right? As proven by the end, or was their fear founded and Yosef had sort of transformed himself, and now he was putting in his you know, manager's mouth, tell them it was a gift, right? Which is it? We don't know, but it's one of the questions you have to ask as you go through the story. Now again, there are other parts of the story where, which are very clear which part of him is expressing himself. So in 8, I just note that, right, as soon as he sees Binyamin, he's crying, right? He has to leave. That, right, is clear, right? That is pure and simple. Yosef missed the one brother who didn't do anything to him, his full brother, right? The brother from his mother, right? That part of his personality you see coming up time and again, especially with Binyamin and Yaakov, and that, right, that we don't deny at all. In 9, I note the question of the revelation to the brothers, which we already talked about, right? Was this notion that God has put me here to sustain you, was that a new revelation for him? Or was that what drove Yosef the whole time? Right, we can go through the whole story and we'll see elements of it, right? And again, I think different parts of the story can be read in different ways and we can put the emphasis on different elements, but I think our analysis is important to not oversimplify the story and recognize that this is a complicated story. That's the point, right? You're dealing with Yosef as a complex figure. He's a tzaddik, there's no way of denying it, but he's also someone who went through a tremendous amount and he's grappling with that. And we can take the position that almost everything he does is out of a sense of mission and longing for his family, and there's only a little bit of anger. Or you can say there's a lot of anger, but it's hard to deny that all three factors are at some level driving him. To take another one, right? And we're not going to go through every detail on this story because it's a very long story. It's the longest single story in the entire Torah. But let's move to Yehuda's speech, the beginning of Parshas Vayigash. So here, and here I'm drawing on a different analysis, a combination of an analysis by Rav Samet and Rabbi Waxman, where he notes that in order to fully understand the story, so far we've focused only on Yosef, but there are a lot of other players in this story. Specifically Yehuda. Yehuda is the big player in this story. When we read the speech of Yehuda, right, there seem to be a lot of different things that are going on in this story. And what they point out is that to fully understand what's going on in this story, we have to keep in mind two things, or a few things, really. One is that Yehuda thinks he's talking to the viceroy of Egypt, but he's actually speaking to Yosef, which means that, especially since, you know, God is involved in this process, right? Yehuda doesn't realize when he says certain things that they're going to resonate with Yosef the way they're going to resonate, right? God seems to be creating a situation where there's a double audience, right? There's the audience that Yehuda thinks he's speaking to, and there's the audience he's actually speaking to, right? Because, you know, sort of swallowed in his words, he doesn't realize who he's talking to. And to fully understand sort of the complexity of the story, which ties into the complexity we've already mentioned, is to realize that the story concludes after this speech, which seems to have been talking to Yosef on two levels. So if we read through this speech carefully, you'll see that, right, when Yehuda is, the parts of the speech that are directed at the viceroy, right, are going to bring out, are going to highlight the parts of Yosef that expressed his anger, right? Because, right, Yosef as viceroy was the one who was framing them, right? So when Yosef, when he's talking to the viceroy, he is at some level, right, talking to he who framed him. In other words, he's talking to, right, that part of Yosef. When he, you know, tries to pull on Yosef's heartstrings, right, he's talking to Yosef the brother. And part of what seems to crack Yosef is that, without realizing it, Yehuda is delivering a speech that gets at every part of his personality, right? Because Yosef himself is this, you know, double person, which Yehuda doesn't even realize. So if we read the speech, right, let's keep in mind how the different elements within Yosef are going to be affected by this story. So, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches him, Vayomer, Bi Adoni, my master, Yedaber Navdecha Davar Bezne Adoni. Let me say something. It's Perek Mem Dalet Pasuk Yud Chet, the beginning of Parashas Vayigash, first Pasuk. Right, so, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches the viceroy, Yosef, Vayomer, Bi Adoni, my master, Yedaber Navdecha Davar Bezne Adoni. Let me say something. Vayichar Apcha Bavdecha, Ki Chamocha Kefaro. And don't get angry, because I understand that you are as great as Paro. Adoni shalet avadav lemor, hayesh lachem av o'ach. You asked us, do you have a brother or a father? Now, we jump back in the actual story, right, which we just read. Is that actually what happened, right? Not actually, right? If you go back to the story, right, they come, and what does Yosef say to them? Right, Yosef says, you are spies. Right? And then what happens? They say, no, we're not spies. Kulanu ish echad nachnu, kenim anachnu. We're brothers, lo yavadecha meraglim. And he says, no, you're spies. And then they say again, vayomer shnei masar avadecha achim. No, we're 12 brothers anachnu v'nei ish echad, the children of one father. So, if we look at what Yehuda says, Yehuda's actually lying, right? And he's not lying to a third party. He's lying to the person who talked to him, right? So what's he saying, right? He says, you asked about our father and brother. And Yosef would say, no, I didn't, right? No, I didn't. I said you were spies, right? So what must Yehuda be saying by saying that? Well, it sounds like if Yehuda is talking consciously, he's, right, telling Yosef in not so subtly, right, you were framing us and I know it because you never believed we were spies. You said that because you wanted to do something. I didn't know what it was until it happened, right? But clearly you accused us of spies to get at something, and this is what you wanted to get at, right? Because, because Yehuda's, he's retelling the story, right? If it was true that Yosef had just said, oh, you were spies, he really thought you were spies, and within the conversation, the brothers had said, no, we're not spies, we're a father and brother, and Yosef had said, oh, well, that's an interesting thing, maybe I'll test you that way. So then he can't say this. But it sounds like Yehuda is turning to the vicar and saying, I know that you were trying to frame us from the beginning. I sense that something was weird to begin with. You couldn't really have thought we were spies. You realized we weren't. So you must have been trying to get to something. And you, as soon as we said we're brothers, right, suddenly that piqued your interest. He can't say that straight out to Yosef, right? Yosef is the viceroy. But it sounds like he's hinting strongly, I know that you were framing us, right? We weren't tricked. So this, he thinks he's talking to the viceroy, but this is going to be talking to the anger part of Yosef, which, if Brach Elitzur is right, that first moment really was a moment of anger. And it's, so this is Yehuda touching on his anger and saying, you think you got away with it? You think I didn't realize what you were doing? Right? He didn't know it was revenge, but he knew it was unjustified. He's saying, I knew it. So that part of Yosef, the anger is, you know, the anger, revenge side is being called into question. Yehuda's laying it bare, right? So that starts to wake up one part of Yosef. Wait, maybe someone understood what I was doing. The next pasuk. So he said, we said we have a father and a brother. When we said that we have a brother and he's alone and his father loves him. So now, Yehuda is doing a few things. He's continuing the story, but he's trying to pull at Yosef's heartstrings as viceroy, right? But he doesn't realize what he's actually doing is pulling at the longing part of Yosef, because in this description we have an elderly father and a young brother who's left alone to his mother and his father loves him, right? All that longing, right, that he's had for Binyamin, for his family, for his mother, for his father, without realizing it, Yehuda is suddenly pulling on those, on not just the general heartstrings of, oh, we have a poor father, it's your father, your brother, he loves him, he misses, right? Well, he hasn't said yet, missing you, but that's right what we're getting at. So suddenly, part two of Yosef is being pulled on. And you said, bring him down. Right? And you said, let me see him. Right? Which for Yosef is, right, in Yosef's mind, yeah, why did he want to see him? Because he missed him. But by, right, without realizing it, Yehuda is reminding him of how much he cared for Binyamin. Right? So he's pulling on his you know, status as brother. Vanomer el Adoni, and I said to my master, Lo yuchalad nar lazov et aviv. Vazav et aviv amed. I said, he can't leave it. It'll kill my father. Again, right? It's, right, pulling on it. Vatom ral adecha, em lo yireid achichem akaton itchem, lo tosifin lared panayin. You said, if you don't see the brother, you can't see me anymore. Vahi ke alino lavdecha avi. So when, we went to our father, Banagid Loa Divrei Adoni, we told him what you said. Vayom Ravinu Shuvu Shivulana Marochel. He said, bring back food. Vayomer, we told him, Lonu Chala Redet, Im Yeshachino Akatoni Tanu Viaradnu. If our brother's with us, we can go down. Kilonu Chala Pnea Ishvachino Akatoni Nenu Tanu. We can't see him without our youngest brother. Vayomer Avdecha, and your, right, your Avdecha, your father said, Elenu, Atem Yidatem, Kishnaim Yelda Laishti, you knew that my wife had only two sons, Vayitzai Achad Meiti, and one of them isn't here, Vaomar, said, Achtarov Tarav Lori Tivaneina. And he was devoured, and they haven't seen him. And as we know, right, this is, in many ways, what breaks him, right? It's his father loves him, and suddenly, right, the revenge thing starts to break, because, right, Yaakov never rejected him. And then, right, what's going to happen next is going to be that, right, Yaakov, not only is his revenge going to break down against, or his anger against Yaakov going to break down, his anger against the brothers is about to break down, because then he says, if you take him, a disaster will happen, and you'll take, right, I will go down to my grave, right, in bitterness. And now Yehuda says, if I go back without him, his soul is tied up in his. You're going to send your father down, well, you're going to send our father down to his grave. And then, right now, he's about to reveal that it's not just his father who hasn't, right, who isn't what he thought, it's Yehuda, who's no longer as he remembered him. Ki avdecha aravet hanar mim avi lemor. I took responsibility. Im lo avienu elecha vechatati lavi kol hayamim. And I told him that if I don't bring him back, I will have sinned to my father for my whole life. Va'ata yeshev navdecha tachar hanar eved ladani. So please take me instead. Va'anar yalim achav. And he will go back with his brothers. Ki eich elel avi. Vanar inenu iti, how can I go back to my father without Binyamin with me? Penerev varashim tzad avi. So if we read the story and you realize that without realizing it, Yehuda is actually hitting, right, two very strong parts of his personality. He's calling him out on his revenge side of him. And he's saying, I didn't buy it from the beginning, right? Something was weird, right? So he's laying his anger, he's laying Yosef's anger and revenge bare without realizing that, you know, this is Yosef, but simply realizing, but thinking he's talking to the viceroy, he's laying that bare. And at the same time, without realizing it, he's doing everything right to make him, right, long for his father and for Binyamin and to forgive potentially Yaakov and for sure the brothers, who until now he didn't realize that they too have gone through a process of tshuva. At that moment, when all the parts of Yosef have been broken down, right? V'lo yachol Yosef lehitapeg. Yosef can't, right? Can't hold back anymore, and he reveals himself. Right? And I think if you follow it through, I think, right? Brachi Elitzur's analysis combined with this analysis of this speech, right, brings the whole story together. That Yosef is constantly dealing with three different elements: his commitment to God, his longing to be part of that family for Yaakov, for Binyamin, and eventually all the brothers, and his anger. And when Yehuda manages to sort of, right, mitigate his anger by laying it bare and pull on his longing for his family, it allows Yosef to, right, reveal himself and focus on the third element, which is his sense of mission, right? Once he realizes that his family is there and that he can be part of the family and he can put the anger aside, and then that sense of mission, that Yosef that we saw at the beginning of the story when his brothers weren't there, comes back to the fore in an extremely powerful way, where he says three times, God sent me here, I'm not angry, I'm going to take care of you, bring my father, I will take care of all of you, don't worry about it. And I think, right, that sort of ties the whole story together and the complexity of the story together, right? That it's not a story simply of the tzaddik Yosef with no anger, but nor is it the vindictive Yosef. It's a Yosef who is torn and is trying to deal with it, and the brothers, without realizing it, especially Yehuda, bring him to the point where one, he can let go of the anger element, and the other two can come to the fore to the conclusion of the story, his longing for his family and his commitment to God. Which brings us to just one last point in the story, which is the ending, right? The sad thing about the Yosef story, it's a beautiful story, it's an extremely powerful story, but it has a tragic ending, right? Which is, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, we would like at this point in the story, you know, Yosef has been heroic and said, you know what, you sold me here, I've been here for years, I'm the viceroy, I can do whatever I want, but I'm not going to. Right, you're my brother. You're my brothers. God sent me here. I love you. It's all going to be okay. We would expect now that Yosef and his brothers, you know, okay, they make up. Yaakov comes. Friday night dinner. They all get together in Goshen. Right, they nice family story. But it doesn't end that way. And we turn to the end of Sefer Bereishis to Vayechi. Right, really, all the way at the end, Yaakov dies. And after Yaakov dies, Pasuk, this is Perek Nun, Pasuk, Tesvav, Vayiru Ache Yosef Kimeir Avihem, they saw that the brothers had seen that Yaakov died, Vayomru Lu Yistamenu Yosef, now he's nursed hatred against us, Vashev Yashiv Lanu Et Kol Hara Asher Gamalnu, so he's going to pay us back for everything we did. Vayitzavu al Yosef lemor. So they tell Yosef, Avicha tzival lefnei moto lemor. Your father commanded before he died. Kotam ruli Yosef. Tell Yosef, Ana sana pesha achecha vechatatam ki ra'ag malucha. Forgive them for all the bad they've done to you. Vasana sana lefesh avdei elok ke avicha vayef Yosef bedabram elav. And he said, and they lied to him, and they say, Yaakov said, forgive them. And Yosef cries. And he doesn't realize, they don't even realize why he's crying. They say, we'll be your slaves. Don't cry. Right? What are you crying? Don't be afraid. Am I in place of God? Yeah. You thought that this was evil. You were trying to hurt me. He thought it was going to be good. He wanted me to support you. But don't be afraid. I'm going to support you. And your children. And he speaks to their heart and he comforts them. So, what you see in this part of the story is that Yosef may have gotten over the anger and the revenge, but his brothers never were able to forgive themselves and realize that he got past it. So even though Yosef did move past it and wanted to be part of the family and wanted them to recognize that he was committed to God and he really didn't blame them, or he did blame them, but he had forgiven them because he was going to be the bigger person, they never forgave themselves, so they could never allow him back into the family because they always thought that he was harboring that resentment. He wasn't. He'd moved past it after that speech. But they never realized that he did that. So the story ends tragically, where Yosef, as Roy Waxman puts it, right? Yosef never moved to Goshen. Yosef was in the palace. Well, we don't think about that, but Yosef was in the palace and they were in Goshen. And when you listen to these words, his brothers sent to him. It sounds like they didn't see each other that much. And they weren't next door neighbors. They didn't see him, right? He didn't get what he wanted in the end. He had a relationship with Yaakov. But with his brothers, it never seemed to have happened. And even at the end of Sefer Bereishis, the after this story, there's one last story, which is the death of Yosef. Terei Waxman notes that right before this, we'd had the death of Yaakov. And Yaakov's death is described. All his family is around him. All the brothers are there. He's giving brachos. And then he passes away with his whole family there. And they hug him, and they kiss him, and they weep, and they mourn all together, and they go as a family to bury him, and there's a feeling that Yaakov is the patriarch of the family. Contrast that to the last psukim here, that Yosef dies. Pasuk Chav Dalet, Vayomer Yosef al Achav. So Yosef says to his brother, Anochi, mate, I'm going to die. Velokim bakodi yifkod etchem. God is going to remember you. Ve'le'etchem ha'aretz hazod el ha'aretz asher nishba l'Avraham l'Yitzchak l'Yaakov. He's going to take you out. And he made them promise, God will remember you when he remembers you. In the future, bring my bones with you. And he dies at 110. He's embalmed. He's put in a coffin in Mitzrayim. End of Sefer Bereishis. No crying. No being buried with his family. All you get is, please, in the future, when you get out of here, remember me, right? Take me with you. All there is at the end of Sefer Bereishis is a hope that one day they'll move past it. And that when they finally leave, they'll take his bones with him. But here, that's not it. There's no mourning, right? If you contrast, right, within the same parak, the Yaakov and Yosef, there's no mourning. Who mourns him? Mitzrayim. And he's in Egypt, he's embalmed, he's a king. But his family, his brothers, he tells his brothers, please, when you leave, he doesn't even bother trying to say, right, give me a Jewish funeral now. It's not even in the discussion. And we can say, because he was the king, he couldn't leave. But the point is, the psukim drive the point home. Yaakov is mourned by his family, is buried by his sons, dies with his brothers surrounding him, with his sons surrounding him, and Yosef dies with no tears, right, without his brothers around him. He's buried in Egypt, and all you get is, please, one day, take me out of here, bring me back into the family. And it seems to be that the tragic ending of the Yosef story is that, despite the fact that Yosef really does become the bigger person, and his desire to be part of the family and his desire to be committed to God overpower his feelings of anger and revenge, the brothers never quite get over it, so they don't allow him to actually be part of the family. And as we noted all the way at the beginning, we talked about it, it seems like the story doesn't reach its resolution in Sefer Bereishis at all. It reaches its resolution when his bones are actually taken out at the end of the Mitzrayim story, which at the time we just noted that the linguistic parallels from the beginning of the sale of Yosef story to the Karban Pesach, which is the priest, right, the pre-leaving Mitzrayim story. I won't go the whole thing, but just to write al regalachas, the sale of Yosef's story is the goats and coats story, right, where you have his coat is taken off and covered with the blood of the goat, and he's being sold by his brothers, right? And right before we leave, we have the commandment to kill the goat, right, the sheep, to take the blood, but this time not put it on the coat, but put it on the doors. Instead of the blood being used to trick Yaakov into thinking his brother is dead, the blood is put on the doors, and God says, stay in the house with your family. Right, the blood is on the outside and keeps you with your family because you're not allowed to be out. You need to be within the blood rather than the blood being what separates. It's the goat's coat's blood story, well, really times four. We went through all of them in our first year. But it sounds like the real resolution, tragically, doesn't come here, doesn't come in Yosef's lifetime. It's the Jewish people as a whole will eventually reintegrate Yosef into Bnei Yisrael at the end of the story, but we don't get to see that at the end of Sefer Bereishis. So in a way, despite the fact, despite all of Yosef's heroic, you know, righteousness throughout the story, because the brothers can't accept it, he doesn't get what he wants, and we have to wait a few more parshios for the full resolution of the Yosef and his brothers' story. So I think that brings us to the end of this unit.